And now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and a very warm welcome to Shout Out. I'm Andy Shilton.
And I'm Tara. Coming on this week, we'll be hearing about the history of trans people, the science, the history, the facts.
And we're joined live in the studio by Jacqueline to talk all about the new EHRC guidance.
All today.
Right here on Shout Out.
Someone sounds nasal, don't they?
I was going to say that lovely, demure Scottish voice. How are you feeling?
I'm fine. I had a nice night. A little bit too much whiskey, maybe.
Scotch whiskey or foreign?
Mostly Scottish, Islay mostly, but there was a little bit of Irish and Welsh in there as well.
Was there any dancing on tables and shouting?
No. Concentrate on the whiskey.
Were you shouting at the whiskey?
No. I was enjoying it.
Until you passed out.
I made it home. I got on a bus and I made it home.
That's good. That's I bet you can't remember it though.
Oh, I do. Yeah.
Oh dear. I heard that before your radio show too. It's
one of those things, isn't it? And I popped into everyone. You were on the phone.
I was on the phone. You answered the phone. You said, "Hello, I'm drunk." I'm like, "Hi, I'm Andy."
Well.
So anyway, nice to see you let your hair down.
Yeah, nice for a change. Mm. I don't do very. Once a month, I'll do a whiskey session.
Yeah.
I won't drink for the rest of the month. Generally.
That'd be why it goes to your head so much. You're only doing it.
I don't need to build up a tolerance. No.
No. Just means you can't drink so much whiskey, I suppose.
I enjoy it.
Anyway, drink responsibly if you're listening at home. Not like Tara. Pat Show coming up today.
Yep.
Got some.
Well, that was short.
Well, we're going to be doing a lot of discussion about EHRC.
Wait for the convo. Yep. Short and sweet.
Steph, help me out.
Thanks for listening to us. We're going to put a playlist on now.
I didn't have any haggis.
You didn't?
No.
I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
Proud.
Not even for breakfast.
No. What's in Korean?
Some Korean?
Korean, yeah.
For breakfast, after a night on the whiskey?
No, I had oats, actually, for breakfast. I had Korean last night.
Oh, right.
On the way home.
What was his name? Korean haggis.
Korean haggis.
Well, that'd be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Flavoursome, I think.
Spicy.
Yeah.
Sounds very spicy.
Oh, hurling
kimchi and haggis.
Spicy twice.
I just think of their poor little faces.
Yeah. I know, when they're harvested and... chopped down.
Don't, Terry, stop it.
It's almost vegetarian.
What? Wow.
I have had vegetarian haggis and it is very nice.
We're doing a very serious show today. You've got to be like, you know, proper serious.
I will be there.
You know,
don't worry.
Would you like something to wipe the tears away?
EHRC,
Yeah, well, you've had to be in the... Well, I don't blame you for it. Everyone's had to be in the bonnet about it, but that's the whole point of the show, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So. We have to get serious on that now and again.
So, well, would you like some science, history and facts about it?
Yes, please.
Yeah. This is Stefan Ez. What do you do?
Tandem.
You did a whole lot of research into this, didn't you?
We did. We looked at social media and what facts and stats the trans community were using and what stats the TERFs were using. Some of them, well, most of them on both sides were exaggerated for their own benefits. So we dug and drilled and we found out the facts. And the facts are still coming down on the side that trans, wait for this, aren't a social media contagion. Wow. You heard it here first.
I didn't know you were.
Yeah.
No, but that's the stories the TERFs would like you to believe.
Right. Okay. Shall we have a listen?
Go on, please. Then. What science actually knows about why LGBTQIA folk are LGBTQIA+.
a history written before anyone was listening.
Long before modern medicine had a vocabulary for it, human cultures around the world were already recording what they observed, that some people in every society lived outside the identity assigned to them at birth. The Hijra of South Asia appear in texts stretching back over 2,000 years, including the ancient epic and the Ramayana. Across hundreds of distinct indigenous nations in North America, people now referred to as Two-Spirit held recognized roles as healers, mediators, and spiritual leaders, roles that existed long before European contact and were documented by early colonial observers who often did not understand what they were seeing. The Fa'a Fafine of Samoa have been a recognized and respected part of Samoan society for centuries. The Galli of ancient Rome lived publicly as women within established religious life. Medieval European records, church documents, legal records, chronicles describe people living outside the identity they were assigned at birth, centuries before any modern framework for understanding this existed. Every continent, every era of recorded history, independently, without contact with one another, cultures across the world developed ways of recognizing and accommodating the same human variation. This matters because one of the most common arguments made against LGBTQI+ people is that they are a modern invention, a product of social media, progressive ideology, or cultural contagion. A historical record makes that argument impossible to sustain. These people have always existed. What is modern is only our ability to understand, at a biological level, why.
The biology nobody taught you.
If the biology of human development had been taught properly without the politics that surrounds it, many of the arguments currently being made in parliaments, courtrooms, and newspaper columns would have nowhere to stand. The science does not resolve every question, but it does dismantle the most fundamental ones. Here is what actually happens when a human being develops.
We all start the same.
For roughly the first 6 weeks of development in the womb, every human embryo is biologically identical. There is no male, there is no female. There is a developing organism with the same cells, the same structures, and the same potential in every direction. Nothing has been committed to yet. Then something begins. Hormones flood the developmental environment. A cascade of biological signals starts shaping what the body will become. And here is the detail that changes the entire conversation about human identity and sexuality. It does not happen all at once. It happens in stages, separate stages with separate hormonal environments. And those stages can produce different outcomes in the same body.
The two developmental windows.
The genitals develop first. A hormonal surge triggers the differentiation of reproductive anatomy. That process runs, completes, and stops. Then, weeks later, in a completely separate biological event on a completely separate hormonal timeline, the brain begins its own developmental process. Two different windows, two different hormonal environments, not locked together, not guaranteed to produce identical outcomes. In most people, they align. In some people, they do not. When the hormonal environment present during brain development differs from the one that shaped the genitals, the result is a person whose neurological sense of self does not match the body they were born into. That is a transgender person, not a confused person, not a trend, not a product of social media.
The evidence you are already walking around with.
You want proof that the human body can carry the architecture of both developmental paths simultaneously? Well, look at a man's chest. Every man alive has nipples. They do nothing. They will never serve any biological function. They formed during the early, undifferentiated window before the hormonal cascade arrived. By the time testosterone surged, the nipples were already there, already built into the tissue. The body created them during the window when it had not yet committed to a developmental direction, and then the window closed. Nobody holds a parliamentary debate about male nipples. Nobody says men with nipples are following a trend. It is accepted as a straightforward quirk in developmental biology. But it is the same biological process, a brain developing in a different hormonal environment from the one that shaped the genitals, because those two things happen in separate windows, is not strange or mysterious. It is a variation produced by the same kind of developmental staging that put nipples on every man who's ever lived. One gets laughed off as a curiosity, the other becomes front page news. That is politics, not science.
what brain research has found.
Deep in the base of the brain sits the hypothalamus, which regulates some of the most fundamental aspects of human biology. Within it is a structure called the bed nucleus of the stria terminalis. Research beginning in 1995, led by Zhu and colleagues at the Netherlands Institute for Brain Research and published in Nature, found that this structure differs in size between men and women, and that in trans women it resembles the structure found in non-trans women rather than non-trans men. A follow-up study by Kriver and colleagues in 2000 replicated this finding using neuron counts rather than volume measurements. Crucially, both studies found these differences held even in participants who had not received cross-sex hormone treatment, suggesting the differences are developmental, than rather as a result of medical transition. It is worth being honest about the limits of this research. The original studies had small sample sizes, and some scientists have noted methodological questions that warrant caution about sweeping conclusions. The BSTC is also primarily associated with anxiety and fear responses in animal models, making its precise role in human gender identity an active area of investigation. But the finding that a measurable structural difference exists in this brain region between trans and non-trans people present before any medical intervention has held up across multiple independent replications over 3 decades. At a 2018 presentation at the European Society of Endocrinology, it was reported that brain activation patterns in trans adolescents responding to pheromones more closely resembled those of their experienced gender than their birth-assigned sex. The results suggested these differences appear early in development, though this was a conference presentation rather than a full peer-reviewed paper, and the field awaits further large-scale studies of this kind.
What the genetics shows.
Identical twins share virtually all of their DNA. If being trans were purely a product of social influence, the rate at which both twins in an identical pair are transgender would be no higher than chance. But it's not. The largest pooled analysis of twin studies to date, a 2025 meta-analysis drawing on 463 twin pairs, found that the concordance rate among identical twins was 21.2%, which was 2.6 times higher than the 8.2% rate seen among fraternal twins, a statistically significant difference. Earlier individual studies have found somewhat higher rates. One widely cited 2012 study found 39% concordance in identical twin pairs, though that study used a smaller sample. The pattern is clear. Identical twins are significantly more likely to both be trans than fraternal twins who share only half their DNA. These findings suggest a substantial genetic contribution to gender diversity. DNA does not follow social trends. The genetic architecture is there. It is consistent across independent studies and it points at biology every time.
What happens in the womb?
There is a condition called congenital adrenal hyperplasia, CAH, in which a female fetus is exposed to elevated androgens during a critical developmental window. People born with this condition consistently show higher rates of gender nonconformity and trans identity than the general population, a direct, measurable, documented link between prenatal hormonal environment and gender identity. There is also the case of diethylstilboestrol, DES, a synthetic estrogen prescribed to pregnant women from the 1940s to the 1970s. Research on people exposed to it in the womb has produced suggestive but more complex results. A 2024 French study found 4 cases of trans identity among a cohort of 253 DES-exposed males, a notably higher rate than population averages. However, a larger 2020 study examining over 5,000 DES-exposed individuals found the evidence for gender identity effects was limited by very small numbers of cases, and the results for sexual orientation were mixed and imprecise. This line of research is genuinely interesting and points towards prenatal hormone exposure as a contributing factor, but it is more preliminary than the article presents it, and the picture is not yet complete. This is endocrinology, not ideology, but good science also requires accuracy about what is established and what is still being investigated.
The people the binary was never built to explain.
Estimates of intersex prevalence vary significantly depending on definitions. The United Nations cites a figure of up to 1.7%. This comes from the broadest possible definition, including conditions such as late onset congenital adrenal hyperplasia, in which a person is born with entirely typical male or female anatomy. The number of births with visibly ambiguous genitalia is in the range of 0.02% to 0.05%, while estimates under broader definitions can reach 1.7%. Approximately 0.5% of people have clinically identifiable sexual or reproductive variations that a physician would typically classify as intersex. Whichever figure one uses, these are real people whose bodies with a strict female-male binary was never designed to accommodate. Androgen insensitivity syndrome produces people with XY chromosomes who develop fully female bodies because their cells cannot respond to testosterone. They are raised as girls. They identify as women. They are women in every observable physical sense. Klinefelter syndrome produces people with XXY chromosomes. Turner syndrome produces people with a single X chromosome. Mosaic conditions produce individuals whose different cells carry different chromosomal combinations within the same body. These have been documented in medical literature for over a century. The binary was always a simplification. Biology never formally agreed to it.
Gay and bisexual people.
The same science applies. Brain structure studies have found consistent differences in the hypothalamus between gay and straight men that appear to be developmental in origin. Twin studies show higher concordance rates for same-sex attraction in identical twins than in fraternal twins. Prenatal hormone research links the womb environment to sexual orientation outcomes. Sexual orientation develops before birth, shaped by the same biological processes that shape everything else about who a person fundamentally is. Conversion therapy does not work because there is nothing to convert. Every major medical and psychiatric organisation in the world has said so. The evidence is unambiguous. It does not change sexual orientation. It causes harm to the person subjected to it.
What the medical world has concluded.
The World Health Organization removed trans identity from its list of medical disorders in 2019. The American Medical Association, the American Psychiatric Association, the British Psychological Society, the Royal College of Psychiatrists, the Endocrine Society, and the World Professional Association for Transgender Health all agree it is not a disorder. These organisations do not reach consensus by accident. They reach it through the accumulated weight of evidence, and the evidence has been pointing in one direction for decades.
What this all means.
Being trans is a naturally occurring variation in human development. So is being intersex. So is being gay or bisexual. These things emerge from the same biological process that build every human being. They are shaped by genetics, by hormones, and by developmental timing in the womb. They're not choices, they're not illnesses, they're not trends, they're not threats to anyone. The man with nipples he will never use is a small, mundane proof of exactly how human development works, proof that separate developmental windows can produce different outcomes in the same body, and that variation is not error, it is simply what biology does when it builds a human being. The science does not have every answer yet. Research is ongoing, but what it has established across independent laboratories, across decades, across countries, is more than sufficient to answer the question of whether these people simply exist. They do, they always have, and now you know some of why.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
So you remember the Sam and the Womp is now, have you?
No.
Bit of bomb, bomb, bomb.
I just like the tune.
You like the tune? It's a good tune. The vocalist. It's 3 years old now.
The vocalist sounds like Bjorn.
Bjorn.
Yeah. Yeah. Bjorn.
I think my headphones are up rather than
Abba. Bjorn's Abba. Oh.
Well.
Would you like another whiskey after we're done?
No, I don't. I know my limit.
We will be
not last time, will you?
Oh dear. So, but yeah, no, that's Bomb Bomb by Sam and the Womp, which I think is about a good 10 years old now, that song.
So I've taken my headphones off because I can't work out which one I am to turn me down.
Turn you down?
Yes, please.
Is it that one? Is that doing you?
Thank you.
Is that better?
Yes.
Oh,
see, excellent. I'm not the only one.
Mucho appreciato.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, not the only one that's got it
Well, they're usually well up. Yeah. Like, yeah, yeah. I've not lost my hearing that much. Not enough clubbing. That's what it is.
Is that what's going to happen this weekend? You're going out?
No.
Out. Yeah, I've been out for a long time. The only out I'll be doing this year is shout out at Pride.
All day long from 10 a.m.
That's
day
right. Long.
Listen live on BCFM.
Yeah.
And Bath Sound.
And Bath Sound, yes.
Live on two stations.
Yes. Well, hell of a day.
Yeah. So. I'll be interviewing everyone myself and running around everywhere. It's going to be very tiring for me. I don't know what everyone else does.
No.
What do you do, Andy? Just put the pegs show, up in that, don't you? Yeah. The canvas stuff.
Yeah, nothing important.
Yeah. We're going to hopefully interview Jace Don at the end.
Yes.
And who's Sister Sledge.
Sister Sledge, that was it. I was going to say who's the big group this
year.
The main headliner.
So they should be. I mean, massive group, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, are they the headliner, popular. Not Jace?
No, he's afternoon.
Jace is the afternoon headliner. Brilliant. Sister Sledge at the end of the show.
Yeah, and there is, what's her name, from Entrance. She sang Set You Free.
Yeah.
Set You Free!
Wow, it's like they were in the room.
She was in the room, wasn't it? Amazing. Amazing.
Loving your work.
So, are you going to dye your hair rainbow this year?
Eyebrows, he said.
Oh, eyebrows.
Yeah,
all right.
Okay. He's going to grow out a beard.
I have no hair on my head.
No, that's fine.
You're both bald.
We can work with it.
That's all right. We'll just get some Crayolas and colour it. Yeah. We'll be fine.
We can handkerchief.
A bit of spray paint.
No, I just wanted to say, if you're living in the Northwest, or maybe listening online, it's the by-election today in Makersfield, and polling closes at 10 o'clock, so be sure to use your vote.
Yes.
And it was going to be very exciting if you're up late tonight watching the news channels, because the results will come in the small hours of the morning.
Super duper.
As they do with British elections. Yes.
And if you're listening on one of the repeats of the podcast, it might have already happened. You already know the answer.
To it. 14 candidates standing.
Really? 14?
14.
Wow.
No real... Count Binface is standing.
Count Binface.
And,
for the monster-raving loony party.
No, they have their own candidate. They have a separate candidate. And, I missed some of those old by-elections of the past, where there'll be the late, great Lord Such standing and somebody dressed as a rubber chicken and, you know, all this sort of stuff.
That was me.
Amazing.
But they get upset if they get too many votes, don't they?
Yeah.
The traditional parties do, yeah. Well, I mean, Lord Such always said that the Social Democratic Party wound itself up when he beat them in the by-election. More people voted the Loony Party than they did.
Brilliant.
SDP. Oh, dear.
So you want a rubber chicken outfit for Pride? Is this what you're telling us?
Yeah. I have a rubber chicken outfit already. Right. I mean, the things I got in rubber at home.
Okay.
Know.
I mean,
back in the day,
Ez is coming as a dinosaur.
Can we just health and safety here?
Nah.
Rubber suit in the heat.
Yes, be careful.
Yeah,
people.
Be really careful. So,
yeah. Carl got overheated.
Don't drink whiskey, because it does terrible things to you, especially the
dehydration.
Heard that.
So anyway, should we get some of these headlines?
Why not? This is Shout Out News. Welcome along.
Bristol Pride's Darren Carter gave a no-holds-barred and insightful interview to the Bristol Post newspaper this week. Pulling no punches, Darren addressed homophobia and transphobia and the rise of the new right wing in politics. Darren explained also that the costs of running Bristol Pride have skyrocketed in recent years, and noted that many corporate sponsors are facing increases in taxation, which means that the money available for supporting community events like LGBTQIA+ Pride is no longer there. In terms of public attitudes, Darren said that the present year was the most challenging since he helped reboot Pride and bring it back to Bristol in 2010. 59% of LGBT+ people, 86% of trans people have experienced harassment in Bristol over the last year, which is way above the national average figure, he said. But Darren also put the conspiracy theorists and anti-LGBT+ bigots in their place. He said, "Trans people are not the reason that there's been years of underfunding in public services, and gay people aren't the reason why there are potholes in the road."
LGBTQI plus bookstores will join with their independent cohorts across the United Kingdom to mark Independent Bookshop Week from 13th to the 20th of June. One of these valuable community assets, Queer Lit in Manchester, reports Independent Bookshop Week is a celebration of how bookshops can shape a community. As an independent LGBTQI plus bookshop, every book purchased, event attended and recommendation shared helps us continue to create a safe, welcoming space for queer people and allies. Your continued support doesn't just help keep our doors open, it helps us champion LGBTQ plus voices, be a vital community space, and ensure queer stories remain visible, accessible, and celebrated. Thank you for being part of our journey.
Gay actor Stephen Paddy presented a programme on the Welsh language channel Sianel Pedwar Cymru on Friday night last week, called Dim yn Dweud Hoyw, meaning don't say gay. The documentary saw Stephen investigate the timeline and legacy of the hated Section 28 in Wales. Section 28 in England and Wales and Section 2A in Scotland attempted to stop local authorities from anything that could be construed as promoting homosexuality or non-conformist identities, although it's worth noting that not one prosecution was ever brought. Nevertheless, as Stephen explored on the documentary, its effect on funding streams for LGBT organisations and education was chilling. He brought the documentary up to date by looking at contemporary education through the medium of Welsh and how young people interact in the digital age. Mr. Parry is a well-known actor in Wales. He played the love interest to Gordon in Brookside, the 1980s soap opera on Channel 4 and S4C, way back in 1986, making him one of the first seriously represented gay men on television.
The Communist Party of the USA has reminded LGBTQI plus participants of Pride marches that the original gay liberation movement owed a great deal to the left, even when this was not always reciprocated. The party issued a press release saying the LGBTQ plus community is under attack. This is especially true for our trans siblings, targeted for erasure by the fascist right and abandoned by allies willing to throw them under the bus for the sake of political expediency. Even some left are all too ready to dismiss the oppression of queer and trans people. For Marxist Leninists, however, the working class can and must take up the banner of every struggle against oppression. Join us for a working class revolutionary anti-fascist celebration of pride. Early communists and the working class movement was in alliance with progressive ideas on feminism and sexuality. But after the failure of the Russian experiment in communism, the movement globally went down a brutally homophobic path. Only with the rediscovery of gay liberation thought in the later 1960s did the tide begin to turn again, and leftist organisations including trade unions and the progressive press reaffirm their commitment to equality.
New York radical lesbian and non-binary bookstore Gladys will hold a brunch party ahead of the New York City Dyke March on Saturday the 27th of June. There will be a sign and t-shirt making workshop ready for the march, a vegetarian brunch menu put together by DJ Jess, and sounds live on the mixing desk from Shardia. There are limited places on a shuttle bus from Gladys Books to the start of the Dyke March. So that's Saturday, June the 27th, between 1pm and 4pm at Gladys Bookstore, 306 Malcolm X Boulevard, Brooklyn, in New York.
LGBTQI plus pagans and followers of Earth-centric religions will be marking the festival at Litha this weekend. This is the time of the summer solstice, which falls on Sunday 21st of June at around 9.25 in the morning. Many people will be up early to catch the rising sun on this, the longest day of the year. For the symbolism of paganism, the solar year is now at its zenith, with plants and animals at their most exuberant. This is the peak of life, but in the dance of the seasons there is always balance, and from now into the winter solstice in December, the days will gradually grow shorter, and so the wheel of the year will be completed. For followers of LGBTQI plus spiritual practices, Litha is an important festival, but it's also important in secular society as well these days. So if you're celebrating, remember to choose safer sex for erotic encounters, and beware if using drink or drugs. Happy solstice.
And finally, the Iris Prize LGBT plus film festival is returning to where it all began began for its 20th anniversary this October. The festival, which is the largest LGBT plus short film prize in the world, will be back at Cineworld in Cardiff, the venue that hosted the very first festival back in 2007. This year's event runs from Monday the 12th to Sunday the 18th of October and has received a record 672 submissions, a 20% increase on last year, and the highest total in its history. The winner will take home £40,000 to make a new LGBT plus themed film in the UK. The festival is BAFTA and BIFFA qualifying event for the British short film and has grown from a 3-day affair with 1,500 admissions to a week-long celebration attracting 11,000. Weekend passes are currently 30% off until the 30th of June. Full details are available at irisprize.org.
Thank you for tuning in to Shoutout News. We will be back next week with more, but in the meantime, check out the local LGBTQR+ media in your area. Why not start at shoutoutradio.lgbt?
For Shoutout News, I've been Terry Starr.
And I think I've been Ezra Peregrine.
Shoutout News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
For more information about Shoutout Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shoutout.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shoutout Podcast.
A bit of Switch Disco with Ella Henderson there, and that's called React. And if you're old enough, you will remember the sample, which is Children by Robert Miles from the 90s. Lovely track,
wasn't
that one. Yeah. Was it 96? Gosh.
I think roughly.
Yeah, somewhere around there. So,
different world.
Yeah.
Exploring the internet.
One of those songs that kind of appeals to mass generations because they all remember different bits.
Yes.
So it's amazing how many songs actually do get remixed into.
There's a lot of reuse.
Yeah.
It always has been, I suppose.
Yeah.
But in the past, you just recompose a piece of music, but now you can directly sample, can't you?
Yeah. I like the 90s, though. It's like when computers were starting to be used for sampling and stuff.
I had a fun 90s, yeah.
Coming out. And, we don't sound old at all.
We are.
As Tara goes, I remember the 80s.
Well, me too, as well.
Anyway, would you like to introduce our guest?
Hi, Jackie.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good.
Steph, she's on an ever so quick one tonight.
I will slow down. Right, so tonight we're going to talk about EHRC. Would you like to tell us what it is and why we should be really worried about it?
So the EHRC is the Equality and Human Rights Commission, not to be confused with the ECHR, which is the European Court of Human Rights. Just, you know, lovely acronym mix-ups there. And they are the body, the regulator in this country that is tasked with enforcing the Human Rights Act and also, by definition, the Equality Act, which came out of the Human Rights Act. And they have just recently published a revised code of practice that it's going to become statutory guidance. There's a lot to talk about there. But it's not a statutory instrument. It doesn't become law. It's not law, it's guidance. And there's a very important difference that a lot of people seem to miss in the debate about that one.
I guess this comes back to last year when there was the High Court judgment, which is not really, someone's misinterpreted what that court case was about.
Yeah, I mean, so not a lawyer, not legal advice, just an engineer that specialises in system thinking and digging deep into things. But so you're referring to the Four Women Scotland case that went before the Supreme Court last year, which was actually about a very narrow decision.
Yeah.
What it was actually about was, does a trans woman with a gender recognition certificate automatically qualify as a woman for the purposes of a representation target for 50% women on boards in Scotland? That's what the case was actually about.
That's certainly not what they make it out to be about.
No, exactly. And the final line of that judgment says, this is the da-da. In our opinion, it does not, basically. So there's some long and tortuous reasoning for that, but essentially it hinges on the fact that when it's talking about Sex Inequality Act, it talks about pregnancy. And the Supreme Court took that and said, well, it's talking about pregnancy. This is only something that can happen to someone who has the right internal organs for pregnancy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Therefore, and this is what everything that's happening hinges on.
Mm.
Therefore, the word Sex and Equality Act actually means this term that gets thrown around, biological sex. Now, as someone who has a degree in biomedical engineering and studied biology and electronics, that means absolutely nothing.
No.
They don't actually define what biological sex is within the Act.
No, and it's not as it's not as black and white as being binary. As
It's a very messy thing. But the interesting thing is they haven't even attempted to do that.
Hmm.
They define biological sex as sex assigned at birth.
Yep.
And then you get into this wonderful loop of tautology, because if you have a GRC, your birth certificate changes.
Yeah.
Which you're not allowed to see. The only person that's allowed to apply to see it is your pension company, I believe.
Pensions companies, HMRC are made aware of it, a few other people. It's a very complex thing. Essentially, anyone can ask to see it. You don't have to acknowledge the existence of it.
Yeah.
It's basically it. And then if someone does become aware of it officially, it becomes a criminal offence if they reveal that fact to someone else that doesn't need to know.
Oh, I wish I'd do that about outing people who are gay, not me. So give us some of the history. So what is it that people get wrong? Because a lot of people don't know that it's all about, boardrooms and how many men and women are on it.
I mean, there's two things you have to realise. Is there was a growing movement beforehand that jumped on this. So the code of practice the EHRC has published, they started working on that before For Women in Scotland happened.
The current one or the first one that came out?
Well, the first draft, but the current one's not dramatically
but
different.
But there was already an internal alteration of the EHRC already, from what I can gather, that a lot of people that were there were trans-friendly, LGBT-friendly, had left under protest already at this point.
Yes.
Because it does, and it just seems strange that the thing that is labelled the Equality Office, for want of a better phrase, is so anti-equality.
So this is where it gets real fun with the Equality Act itself. The Equality Act is an inclusive act. It is designed to promote inclusion. Okay?
Yeah.
And as Tara said, there is this... there was this hollowing out of the EHRC. A lot of people were replaced with commissioners who favoured a certain ideological position. And that's driven a lot of things. And so what's happened is they've taken this thing in for Women Scotland, and they've then tried to push that out into everything and hinge everything on that. And so we end up with a new code of practice where I've read it more times than I can remember now, and I'm having trouble finding examples where it promotes inclusion where trans people are concerned.
Yeah, it's very, very not.
I mean, it feels like we've been trying to be taken out of society.
Yeah, and then you have the whole thing. It was quite interesting to see, like, one of the disability groups saying, "Hang on a sec, you're also saying put them in the disabled toilets, but that's for the disabled people. Then you're not disabled."
Yeah, well, it's also yay. Let's put pressure on an already overloaded facility.
So if you're an organisation, a business.
Yep.
From what I can gather, there has to be a process that they would have to go through before they could actually exclude a trans woman from the toilet.
Depends.
Okay.
So what we have to be clear about is there are actually three parts of the EHRC code of practice, and this becomes statutory guidance, which is essentially this is how the government interprets the law. It is guidance on how to interpret it to the courts and stuff. It's not the law, but it's a guide to the law. And the one that has been published is for service providers. This is for publishing. This is for people providing stuff to the public, right?
So it does affect a lot of businesses.
It affects a lot of businesses, yes. There is another one that applies to employers, and that's a whole other can of worms. We haven't got there yet. We're still operating under the old guidance.
Right. So, but are they due to replace that one too?
They're almost certainly going to try and replace that one, yes.
Oh, okay.
Right? But with service providers, a couple of important headline points. there was a BBC headline that came out the day after they published the code saying trans people must use the toilet that corresponds to their sex at birth, right? One, there's already been a court case in the High Court that says it would be discriminatory to force a trans person into the bathroom of their gender assigned at birth.
Yeah.
Okay? So there has to be yet another provision for them. So that places a huge cost burden on businesses. Yeah. Second part, there is no obligation for service providers to provide single-sex services.
Mm.
There is zero obligation to do so.
But, I mean, it's also never been illegal for me to use a woman's toilet.
No.
Yeah. And I don't believe that this is going to change that, is it?
No, I mean, they could potentially go after you on, you know, Peeping Tom type things and disruption.
Which is ironic when you go into one that's full of cubicles.
Yeah, exactly.
Particularly in the UK, cubicles are very much more ceiling to floor.
Yes.
In America, they're almost like knee to head height.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Really weird.
And a huge, huge, huge gap where the lock meets the door.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. We've all been to America, can you tell?
So, I haven't been there recently.
I don't think any of us have.
So there's no obligation on service providers to provide single-sex services in the first place. The Equality Act creates the ability for them to do so and has always, even before the court case last year, has always permitted exclusion of trans people, even those with a GRC, so long as it is for... it is a proportionate means to achieve a legitimate aim.
Yeah.
And that's the key to all of this is proportionality.
Because that would mean any business that's going to do that has to have the paperwork in advance and have a consideration for why they would want to
why
do that.
Why they are doing it,
are there any examples that would have a legitimate need to do
so that? There are a couple that exist.
I mean, I suppose if you were a group for pregnant women...
I mean, conceivably women's... women's refuge centres, for example, women's refuge
and some are
rape crisis.
Friendly and some aren't.
Some are and some aren't, right? And that's kind of important because you can see a situation where, particularly someone early in their transition, someone who's just been raped by someone might be a little bit skittish around different people. And so we kind of have to think about these things and weigh up. And it's a balancing act. It's always a balancing act. And what we seem to have done is gone, well, there's the balancing act, right? Let's just put a finger on the scale, one end, and ram it down, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I'm observing, obviously. I'm not trans myself, but it seems to just be making things a lot worse. I mean, it's making it, you know, I mean, there's as far as I'm aware, there is no case where a woman has ever been raped by a trans woman in a toilet.
I can't say there hasn't been. I'm sure someone might.
I know
be
in
able
2025 there were two complaints nationally,
but
about
someone's,
trans women in
someone's
toilets.
Almost like someone's almost certainly going to find one in some country somewhere, right?
Well, yeah.
What we can say is the rate of that happening is so statistically insignificant it won't even move the needle.
Yeah, but they make out like men are going to spend all this time taking estrogen, having their bodies altered, dressing as a woman, just to go in a toilet and do something to another woman.
If someone has nefarious means, they're going to do that already. Yeah. I mean, these are all well litigated arguments. Mm. They come up a lot and they bounce back and forth. And I think,
but that is what they're peddling, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's the whole. I mean, I don't think there's a single person in the UK who isn't sick to death of hearing about women toilets.
I think that's a good thing. So I think people are getting to the point where they're so bored of it, they're like going, why?
Yeah.
Why is the news full of all this?
Yeah.
I did see, I forget who it was, but there was a lady interviewing the head of the Equalities.
Oh, yes.
She couldn't answer the question.
And she just couldn't answer it. And she was saying things like, there's never been a problem with trans people before. Why is it now a problem and how does this address it?
Yeah,
and she just couldn't answer the question.
No.
She went off on this, you know.
So women are more likely to be attacked by cis, white, heterosexual men.
Usually by someone that
they know.
Yes. So this is where the game of stats gets played, though.
Mm.
What happens is, particularly when groups want to challenge this, they position, this is why they say trans women aren't women. That's why they're trying to say they're men, because they want to create this view that the comparator, for the sake of that safety analysis, is all cis white men.
Okay.
Okay, they're not using trans women and the stats around trans women as a comparator. And so that's, and this is, I keep trying to move the needle of the argument on this a little bit, because we do keep attacking the same thing after the same thing, and it's almost like we're, if you look at it in, say, medieval siege terms, we're just lobbing rocks at the wall, hoping that it's going to knock over, and sometimes we're lobbing ourselves at the wall and leaving splats.
Yeah.
And I really just want to start digging a tunnel and take out the foundations and watch the whole thing come tumbling down.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's hard to find the foundations that aren't...
But there are, and this is when we dig into the code that's been published, there are points where there are real, real structural tensions or weaknesses in it that are going to cause a nightmare for implementation. And if we put the thumb on those and press them and make them more obvious, the whole thing will come tumbling down.
So the reality is this is going to go through Parliament, and it's going to, it's because there isn't enough people voting the right
it's,
way.
It's irrelevant.
It's 40 days or...
No, it's not that. So this goes through, it uses what's known as a negative procedure. It's very similar to a negative procedure for a statutory instrument. The reality is the only way to object to it is to create an early day motion.
Which is done.
Which is done. People are, you know, MPs are signing it.
130, is it so?
We're over 140 now.
Okay. But I heard rumours something about the whip was saying they weren't allowed to. And
it's the problem with early day motions is the government controls time in Parliament. The government does not have to give the time for the early day motion to be debated.
Right.
So they can just simply, we're not going to give it time, and then it will pass into law. Oh, well, not pass into law, pass into statutory guidance, and then... Mm.
And then, so I mean, give us some of the examples. What bits in it, if we push, aren't going to make it fall over?
So a couple of really, really, really big examples. And like I said earlier, I'm an engineer that specializes in systems thinking, right?
Yeah.
The big question I always ask is, show me the middle, right? Paraphrasing Jerry Maguire a little bit there. But show me the middle of the argument. There was a meme in the early days of the internet. Idea, question mark, question mark, question mark, profit. Right? What's the bit in the middle? Where's the reasoning that gets us from, we're going to do this, and this is what's happening?
So you mean like implementation type?
Yeah, implementation, proportionality. So let's pick some of the elements in there that are... and I would say, anyone who's planning to write to their MP about this...
You haven't got long.
You haven't got long, but it doesn't matter. We can still write to the MP about it even after this has gone in, because there's two things. Because you will always get back responses that says, the Supreme Court ruled... So right up front, tell them, I'm aware the Supreme Court has ruled. I wish to remind you that Parliament is sovereign and the government with a...
Can overwrite it, and have done.
402 people can change the law, right? Secondly, they're going to talk about trans people need dignity and respect. Get ahead of it and say, people keep saying dignity and respect. Can you explain to me exactly how this provides dignity and respect? Where is the dignity? Where is the respect?
Yeah.
Put them on the back foot, make them answer the question. But if we look at a couple of things in there, there's a really interesting one. I can't remember the exact section, but it talks about gynecological services.
Oh, yeah.
And it says, it literally says in there that trans women have no need of gynecological services, so the hospital could exclude them. Any doctor knows that doing that would be such an egregious breach of medical ethics, they would be up against boards in seconds.
Mm.
Because trans women do need gynecological services for certain things.
I think there's a really important point that we've kind of skipped over a little bit, especially when you mentioned pregnancy services earlier, and it's trans men. Trans men carry children, well, and they are, from my understanding, they are excluded from either toilet. Is that right?
It's true about both sides. Essentially, it says that some of the guidance suggests that a trans person should not use the toilet of their acquired gender, but may be so far transitioned that they would also cause discomfort if they went in the toilet of there.
It's lovely, isn't it?
That starts to sound like an interest, and then it talks about provisioning different spaces, and that's when we get into an argument about Goodwin and loads of other things. But it sounds suspiciously like a phrase. And at a march last year, I carried a placard that said, I will not be separate but equal. And in the comments section, I got photographed, and in the comments section with that photograph, someone said, but isn't that a good thing? And I'm like, tell me you don't know about history without telling me you don't know about history.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of that going on. But the code does say that, you know, trans men are considered women for these services and stuff like that. But the point about the gynecological services is that presents it as if they're right. It presents it as if the EA overrides everything. It doesn't.
But they've been red flagged by the European version, and they've been warned that they're...
They've been warned, yeah. But that's...
I mean, compared to Europe, we're going completely the opposite way, because Europe's going very... very supportive, very pro, very understanding, very know the actual truth.
Yeah.
And we're going back. So, listen, we're literally seconds from the end of the show.
Okay.
It's one of those that
we could go we would
eat through songs and the like. It's been lovely to have you on to talk about it. Very quickly to wrap up, though, is writing to your MP what you're hoping people will do?
Write to your MP, get ahead of the game, demand... Where's the dignity? Where's the respect? Where's the proportionality? That's the key question to ask. What problem are they trying to solve? Where is the evidence?
Yeah.
Show me the middle.
Cool. Well, fingers crossed. It's going to be a long fight, I think, but one that we hope that we'll win and get the equality that we all so much strive for. But thank you so much, Jackie, for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's it for this week. If you have an event, a story, or perhaps you'd even like to get involved with LGBT Plus Radio with us here at Shoutout, do check us out online and get in touch.
Plus, all our shows are available on podcasts, on all good services, as well as a website, shoutout.lgbt.
Shoutoutradio.lgbt. LGBT. Next week it's Sisterhood. From myself and the rest of the team, say bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Shout out.
LGBT Radio for you.